Erfolg wie Gattenschmal. Okay. Okay. And you have a second recording going?
Yeah.
Great. All right. First of all, let me. Today is January 22nd, 2012. And I want to first say hello to the fellows who are here and also to all those listening. Once again, I mention I appreciate all the Divrei Nechama that has come in from all over the world. It's very moving and very humbling. And I only wish I could show my Rebbe some of the letters I've received. That's life. What can I say? Today's shiur is very, very important. You'll see why. It's a shiur that you'll come back to for the next 60, 70 years. If you're involved in chinuch or rabbinate or just trying to be a Torah Jew as the world moves deeper and deeper into the 21st century. Now, what we've been talking about, we're trying to understand the sources. Where do we go? How do we paskin? What do we look for? So we went through Shas. We went through the various types of Perushim. It was a very interesting question that came up with how the Rav dismissed the Meiri and Rav Baran couldn't dismiss the Meiri. And I answered my Talmud Avi Arbersfeld, who raised the issue, that the difference is where they were raised. The Rav was raised in Europe. His whole learning goes back to Europe. He was raised in the old world. The old world did not have a Meiri. Rav Aaron, as you know, was raised in the United States, came to America a bar mitzvah boy. Right after his bar mitzvah, immediately went into MTA and then to Yeshiva College. And for the next 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, sat in his father's chair. But Rav Aaron was raised in America, and with the new land comes a little bit more openness, new perushim de Meiri. I can tell you as a side issue, what I didn't mention last week, but you'll also appreciate it, as you all know, the Rav was in favor of the Vietnamese War. He refused to come out publicly against it. He felt that Jews shouldn't get involved in that level. It could harm Israel. And Rav Baran was an outspoken, vehement, vociferous critic of the Vietnam War. And therefore, you see, there too you see the influence. The Rav who was raised in Europe and saw communism and saw the Nazis, chas v'chalila, we should say a word against America, against the President of the United States, against the State Department, etc. Rav Baran, who was raised in America already, raised in freedom, raised in a country where you can say what you want, and he already went forward. He's not afraid of anyone, totally opposed to the Vietnamese War. I can tell you a joke that was told to me in Moscow in 1981, by someone in the Refusnik community, but that joke says it all, that some big shot is visiting from America, and they show him around the Kremlin, and they're having a discussion about freedom of speech in communist Russia. And the Russian says to him, "We have total freedom of speech. We can curse the President of the United States as we stand here." And the American says, "Yeah, but we don't curse him. We don't have to do it in the Kremlin. We can curse him standing in front of the White House." And that explains, of course, Vietnam, Nam, and Rav Baran and the Rav. Okay, then we went into the Sifrei Psak. And as I showed you, and there's a lot more to the Gonic period, I'm being very brief, but it's not a course in Gonic literature. By the way, the ranking Gaonic scholar in the world, Robert Brody, is an American product, you should know. So we have someone right in there today, a very great individual, very interesting individual. I believe he had a PhD in mathematics, and the essential story is correct. The details may not be totally correct, but I believe he was at Harvard University, and he heard a guest lecture by Professor Shragai Abramson. And that got him so interested in Gonic literature that he left the world of mathematics, went totally into the world of Torah and Shas, Poskim, and Gaonic literature, and he's the ranking scholar in the world on that topic. But there's no question that the Bahag, the Baal Hilchot Gedolot, and I just think that we're not even certain who wrote it, and we're not even certain the manuscript we have, is it total, is it partial, is it Ashkenazic, is it Sephardic, but nevertheless, he had great influence on what was going to happen afterwards. And of course, when you look at the Sifrei HaPoskim, I gave you three major differences. Some Poskim are very sharp and clear, right to the point, don't give you their sources. Classic example is the Rambam. Other Poskim will give you their sources and go into great detail. And of course, the Rif, the Rush are examples of that approach. Then there's a second big difference. Some Poskim follow the Seda Hashas, like the Baal Hilchot Gedolot, and other Poskim invoke their own development, their own Seda, their own order, again, like the Rambam. And of course, the third division, do we only deal with Halacha HaNoheget B'Zman Hazeh, or do we deal with Hilchata the Meshichata? And the Rambam, of course, is the classic example where he deals with Hilchata the Meshichata. And that's where we left off last week. Now, there's no question that Sifrei HaPoskim went through the Gaonic period, went through the Rishonic period. What's amazing that two Svarim receive such acclamation that all of Psak Halacha goes back to these two Svarim, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, did he give reasons? Didn't he give reasons? So the Shulchan Aruch is a very interesting paradox. Because on one hand, when you learn Shulchan Aruch, you don't find reasons. On the other hand, before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote the Beis Yosef on the tour. And in the Beis Yosef, he certainly gives endless reasons to what he paskins. The problem boils down to about 2-3% of his psukim where he contradicts the Beis Yosef. You follow? He says one thing in the Beis Yosef and another thing in the Shulchan Aruch. So you get involved in an entire discussion. What did he mean? What was he talking about? Why did he paskin the way he paskined? And that's why the Rambam is a much clearer example of a posek who said, this is my psak, this is my thinking, this is my da'at, take it or leave it. I'm not here to convince you. If I'm the Maradiatra, you have to follow. The Shulchan Aruch follows that signon, that style. But you can go to the Beis Yosef, you can go to the Kesef Mishnah, you can see the halachic development. Okay, but now I want to come to the heart of the shir, and I want to come into a problem that is alive today and has been alive already ever since the conservative movement came on the scene. I want to treat it hashkafically today. Many, many lectures from now, I will come back to this problem and deal with it halachically within the context of a very famous siman in Choshen Mishpat. But now I want to deal with it hashkafically. Gentlemen, many of you in this room are studying for smicha. Some of you may already have smicha. What does it mean studying for smicha? So right away you know that no one can get smicha bisman hazer, at least in organized yeshivat, without studying Yored Deah. And Moshe Lastner and Danny Wolf, you've put a lot of effort into Yored Deah. Are you wrong? No, let me ask a very simple shaila. Why Yored Deah? Ribbono shel Olam, there's Masechet Chulin. There's the Rif, there's the Rush. There's so many Rishonim. Why Yored Deah? What happened here? And we're talking about a sefer that's been around for around to 500 years. And it's not just Yored Deah. Then we had a Shiloh with Shabbos. He opens up the Mishnah Berurah. Moshe Chaim had a question. All right. He opens up the Shulchan Aruch. He wants to see the Sfadik Psak. But we're all opening him up the Shulchan Aruch. None of us are going beyond. None of us are going before. We're opening up the Shulchan Aruch. That's a fabulous question. But I want to make the question even stronger. Just excuse me, it's been a hard day and I hope I'm not coming down with a cold. The weather here is not the best. And the older you get, you understand why. All the snowbirds run away to Florida. Michael, I want to ask another question. Did you go to Ramaz? You heard about Ramaz? Ramaz just had a reunion here in Israel. I think it was celebrating 75 years or something like that. You can correct me if I'm wrong. 85 years, 80 years, 90 years. No, it can't be 90. It has to be 75 years, perhaps. So Ramaz just had a reunion last Thursday night. Okay. My wife came home from the reunion with very mixed emotion. One hand, it was good to see old friends. On the other hand, she was upset that there were so many men there, Ramaz graduates, without kippot. Okay, Ramaz started to function in the mid-30s. It was a different era. I believe it was 37 when it began. A different era, and it was reaching out to children from different types of homes. And Ein Hachinami, many kids, when they walked out of Ramaz, they took their kippah off, and they walked on without a kippah. Okay. I hope some of them became better Torah Jews. But nevertheless, my wife saw many Jews on in years, still without kippah, in Betochecha Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Okay. So let's say you went to a school many years ago like that, and you have to do a term paper. And you decide to do a term paper, I want to be a good Jew. But I'm not satisfied with many of the psukim. I'm not satisfied with a lot with our Rabbeim are telling us. And I want to live according to Beit Shammai many times, not Beit Hillel. I want to live according to Abaye when we paskin like Rafa. I want to live according to Rabbi Yehuda when we paskin like Rabbi Meir. Tell me. Is this a good Jew? Shas is filled with machloket. How do you do shechita? Where do you cut in the neck? Hagrama. There's a certain halacha that's paskind. No, you want to be more mekil. Give you two live examples. Here you are. Here I was, 1970, down in the beach in Eilat. By the way, the story I'm going to tell you is not true. One of the few times I tell a story that's not true, but I want to drive a point home. It is true, I was on the beach in a lot with the BMT boys. It was a very undeveloped a lot, and you stayed on the beach in tents. Hanukkah time, beautiful weather. And the boys bring what looked to me like schnitzel covered with sour cream. I say, gentlemen, I know you're a bunch of rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debats, surreptitious bummies. But, basa v'chalav, they say, Rebbe, what's the problem? We paskin like Rabbi Yossi Haglili. And you all know in Tiberias, Rabbi Yossi Haglili was matan having chicken and milk. He never accepted the gezeira. All right? Then afterwards they told me it's a joke, it's parva schnitzel. By the way, you should know this really happened, that there was a reception at Shari Tzedek Hospital for an American senator during the 9 days, and they served schnitzel. And the girls doing volunteer work came to me from a home goal, they're serving meat during the 9 days. So I called Dr. Lipschitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was the head of Shari Tzedek, a YU graduate, forget his Hebrew name already, but I knew him as Lipschitz. And I said, what's going on here? You're serving meat during the 9 days? He says, no, that was vegetable, soya product. But But you can't serve a guy, a senator, they're not, you're going to serve him fish, you're not going to serve him meat. So he made believe it was meat. So the boys told me, fine, it was a pile of a schnitzel, and it was sour cream. Now tell me, that's a good taina. Why can't they paskin like Rabbi Yossi HaGlili? If they lived in Tiberias, they could have chicken and milk. I'll give you a true story now. In Philadelphia, which was not a near the Ein B'Yisrael when I was a kid, the city was totally conservative. There were barely any Shomer Shabbos Jews there. There are reasons why. I don't want to go into it now, but there are reasons why. And there was a mohel there. I don't want to mention his name, a very prominent Yerushalmi family. And the mohel used to drive to do a brit on Shabbat. So one time, one of my congregants actually asked him, how do you drive to do a brit? And he got hysterical. What are you, an Amoritz? You know, Rebbe Eliezer's opinion. He quoted the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed, and Enochi Nami, Rebbe Eliezer Paskin, that not only is Mila Docha Shabbos, but all Hechsherei Mila. And if you didn't boil the water before Shabbos, you boiled it on Shabbos to clean the knife. Allah had come of a comer. If the mole didn't get there, couldn't get there without driving, he's allowed to drive. Otherwise, there won't be a brit. No, what's wrong with that? This is a very interesting question. Okay. Powerful question or not? The mole driving on Shabbat, the boys enjoying chicken and sour cream. Gentlemen, look in to the Hakdamah of the Rambam to Mishneh Torah. And I'll summarize it for you. I have to tell you in advance that every word I'm telling you now, I not only heard from the Rav when I was a student, but many years later in 1978, when I spent the Shabbat in Boston, and we spoke in learning for many hours over Shabbat, and I knew a little bit how to learn already by 78. I wasn't the Amoritz I was when I was a student or when I got smicha. And I spoke with the Rav again in great detail about this question. So what I'm telling you now is from the Rav, but it's the basis of Torah. So you all know the Rambam describes the whole history of Torah Shabbat Peh. And he describes the Gemara, and he describes Ravina with Ravashi, and he describes how they wrote everything down because people were forgetting. And the Rambam says, listen to these words, he raises the question, why can't we argue with a maskana of the Gemara? If the Gemara paskins like Rebbe Eliezer, if the Gemara paskins against Rebbe Eliezer, why can't we argue? Do what we want. If the Gemara paskins against Rebbe Yossi HaGlili, why does it obligate us? It's machloket. There's plenty of machloket in life. And all of you know, when I say lecharav, you have a Rebbe, you follow your Rebbe, you ask a question. But why can't I have freedom of choice? And the Rambam raises this very question. And he says, and I quote, Abol kol advarim shebetalmid habavli chayavim kol beit Yisrael olechet bahem. V'kayfin kol yevyir, v'kol medidah medina, l'nhold b'chol chamin hagot shenagu chachamim shebetalmud, v'ligzor gezeir autam, v'lelechit betakantam. So, comes to a maskana of the Gemara, comes to a takana, comes to a gezeira. Every Jew, no matter where he lives, is obligated to observe that maskana. And the Rambam adds the words, these are very important words. Why? Hoel the Alton had the Varim Shebit Talmud, Hiskimu Aleichem Kol Yisrael. All the Jews agreed. This obligates us. Hiskimu Aleichem Kol Yisrael. Simple English, crystallization. Modern Hebrew, hitgapshut. Hitgapshut, hilchatit. What does this mean? Michael, why don't you move right in front of me so I can see you, can I enjoy your face? You're taking notes or it's... Okay. Yeah, sit here. Don't block. Let me see the sun behind you. Let me enjoy. I have to... Baruch Hashem, those who came today, you see, anyone who traveled here was afraid to come. The rain, the cold. Hiskimaleim Kol Yisrael. What does this mean? Who was masking? How were they masking? You're coming into the heart of understanding the halachic dynamics. Gentlemen, machloket is wonderful. No two of us think alike. One of the lines that was edited out, I had an additional chapter in the manuscript of Washington, but the OU was afraid that if they have to publish two volumes, it will not sell in the contemporary financial economic crisis. So one chapter was edited out and pushed a little here, a little there, but one of the amazing stories, among others, was left out, and that was very simple. When I came to Moscow in 1981, the first time, everyone got along. When I came in 85 already, kitat. Jews were fighting. Different styles, different chugim, different groups. So I wrote in the manuscript, when I came back in 85, I knew that Torah was taking hold in Moscow because there already was controversy. Baruch Hashem, there was already machloket. As Professor Liebman said, Chazal had a sense of humor. What do you say every morning in davening? Ein kalokenu, talmidei chachamim marbim shalom be'olam. If you saw the weekend papers of Makor Rishon, Hamavaser, Hamodia, Yated Ne'eman, Hashavua, etc., etc., believe me, you would not agree that talmidei chachamim marbim shalom be'olam. So you see, machloket is natural, abriyot. But at a certain point, we have to crystallize. Otherwise, we are breaking into two nations, three nations, four nations. What good does it do the Jews if I'm not going to eat in your house, you're not going to eat in my house, you're not going to trust my Shabbos observance, you're not going to trust my Karet Mishpacha? Didn't the Gemara boast about Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai that despite all the machloket, they constantly intermarried? They never said, we're not going to marry with you. And this is crucial to the survival of the Jewish people. If we're going to wind up, there's an expression in Yiddish that every Jew makes Shabbos fazich. Every Jew makes Shabbat on his own. We're not going to be one people. And this is why, after a certain point in time, the halacha crystallizes. The machloket is Torah Shebaal Peh. And if you learn Beit Hillel and then Beit Shammai, I heard from the Rav many times, you get the same scha of Lima Torah, even though we paskin like Beit Hillel, not like Beit Shammai. But when it comes halacha l'maaseh, we have to live according to Beit Hillel. And this is what it means, Hizkiyo Maleihem Kol Yisrael. And the Rambam understood with the conclusion of the Gemara with such an authority that we cannot argue with their decisions. After the Gemara, the Rambam writes, each one does what he wants. There's no focal base, and there's no central base, and there's no supreme authority, and everyone can do as they understand, as they wish. And the Rav said what ultimately happened was hundreds of years later, you felt the need again that it has to crystallize. It's an ongoing process. And this was the Rambam. No sefer gained more acceptance than the Rambam. Then you come to the Shulchan Aruch, and of course, the Shulchan Aruch conquered the world. Hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. A very important concept. And this is why halacha begins and falls with the Shulchan Aruch. Everyone accepted it. Why everyone accepted it, we'll talk about in months to come. But the most simple answer, because suddenly you had a code that was good for Ashkenazim and good for Sephardim. The Shulchan Aruch wrote the code for Sephardim. The Rama, within a few years, came along and wrote the Mappah, put a tablecloth on it, and made it accessible to Ashkenazim. And everyone could find their psak there, could find their way of life. And Hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. And this Rambam, those words, become crucially important. Now, there's another question. What do you mean, Hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael? Who, when, what, where? You come from democracies. You vote. State of Israel, every 4 years or sooner, if the government wants to call an earlier election, you vote. United States of America, every 4 years, you know what's going on now in the primaries, what's gearing up for an election, which is, a year and a half away. Everyone votes. Right to vote. What do we say about a democracy? Your ballot is your bullet. Have you heard that expression? Russia, China, Cuba. Think what they go through to have a democracy. But America's a great democracy. Israel's a democracy. Britain is a democracy. France is a democracy. Italy is a democracy. Spain is a democracy. So what do you mean, Hiskim Alehim? They put it to a vote? So here you have to understand, if you've learned the Mashar, my days the Mashar was very powerful, very popular. Nowadays, I know not everyone learns the Mashar anymore. And the Mashar has an expression, Makshim Ha'olam. The world asks. Have you heard that expression? So I went over to my Rebbe when I was a junior in high school. Excuse me. I went over to my Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, and I said to him, Rebbe, what does it mean, Makshin Haylam? What world? When world? Now you go outside of the yeshiva. Who gives a hoot about the Gemara? And he gave me a fabulous answer. Makshin Haylam, Moshe? The world that counts. The world that learns. So you see, it's not that you put Yiddishkeit to a vote. If you were to put Yiddishkeit to a vote, I'd hate to think what the results would be. Chas v'chalila. But in the world of learning, in the writing, somehow you feel a consensus has been reached. It's there. The machloket is over. The overwhelming majority of the rabbinic authorities accept this opinion. And it's an ongoing process. I once spoke about it in great detail. I can give you a simple example, both lahakel and lahachmir. Lahakel, very simple. When an electric shaver came out, machloket began, machloket which continued. I don't believe today anyone in his right mind is going to tell someone who shaves, you're a sinner. Baruch Hashem, enough tshuvot were written that we understand why an electric shaver is mutter. You want to be machmir? Fine. But me'ikar din it's mutter. There's a crystallization here, lahakel. I'll give you an example of a crystallization, lahachmir. When I grew up, I saw Hasidic Rebbeim turning lights on Yantif. In the Svadic world, every posek basically ruled you could turn on lights. In the Peinisher, there was Rabbi Rosenberg and Montreal, wrote a long kuntrist why you can turn on lights. Today we know how electricity works. We're much more astute. There isn't a posek in the world who would permit turning on lights on Yom Tov. And with my own ears, I heard Rabbi Ovadia Yosef say, don't rebuke your parents. If they turn on lights, they were raised that way. And my Rebbeim paskin that way. But he said, now that we understand Skirat Magal and Binyan, what goes into electricity, you should not turn lights on in Yom Tov. I heard Rabbi Ovadia with my own two ears. So you see, here there's a crystallization l'chumrah. Okay, a very important point. The world should not be hefka. Where are you going? Oh no, beside that, but don't leave. I'm coming now to the atom bomb.
I'll be right back.
No, beside that. I said Bayit Vegan versus Bayit Vegan, no? Gentlemen, to the best of my knowledge, Aharei Kefir is sitting at the foot of Bayit Vegan at this moment in time. Technically speaking, I don't want to shock you, but Grus is not in Bayit Vegan, it's in Givat HaRakafot. If you will go to a map of the city, you will see that this area, this ridge of the hill, Reches HaHar, and the valley to Givat Mordechai is called Givat HaRakafot, because cyclamens grow wild here. And originally this was called Givat HaRakafot. It's not in my honor, it's a reality that I came into. Nevertheless, today people popularly say that Grus is in Bayit Vegan. When I came in Aliyah, Bayit Vegan was nowhere near here. The last place you had a house of two was Rehov Uziel. And Baruch Hashem, Machid Gvul Almana, Bayit Vegan came down to conquer Givat HaRakafot. Okay, so sitting in Bayit Vegan, Aharon HaKefir has just explained a very interesting point of view, which is Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik's point of view, and anyone who deals with the dynamics of the halacha has to reach the same conclusion. We cannot have hefkedot. We have to be able to live and be one people. We can tolerate machloket for a reasonable amount of years, 200, 300 years, but all the rabbanim who deal with it, it reaches a point where you know what the psak is. I can give you many more examples. For instance, AIH, artificial insemination husband. There isn't a posek in the world who knows how to learn, not a thunkai posek, but someone who's a yira lamdin, a tzaddik, who would not be matir AIH today. You understand? I don't want to go into more details, but I can tell you at Shaarei Tzedek, they do miracles with AIH and solve many problems for childless couples. AIH, artificial insemination husband. Now, Bayit Vegan, there also happens to live a Jew who has a number of followers who have learned in this kollel over the decades, Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardoza. Rabbi Cardoza is a very interesting individual. He's Dutch, he's from Holland. You can see from the name Lopez Cardoza on his father's side, he has big, big Sephardic yichus, Eidot HaMizrach, Spanish, Portuguese yichus. He has a David Cardoza Academy named after his father, and some of you have heard him lecture, have heard him speak. He is a product of the black yeshivat. And I have to tell you, he has moved into a position which is the absolute opposite of what the halachic dynamics are about. I will tell you that when I study his viewpoints, his declarations, I will tell you that what I'm about to show you sounds to me like middle of the road of classic conservative Judaism. And he writes, I'm quoting to you, these ideals put out by the Institute for Jewish Ideas and Ideals. It's at the David Kadoser Academy. And I am concerned about the future of Judaism and its impact on its young people. I teach Jewish philosophy. I am confronted daily with countless young Jews who search for an authentic Jewish religious way of life, but are unable to find spiritual satisfaction in the prevalent halakhic system as practiced today in most ultra or modern Orthodox communities. Many of them feel this, listen to the words carefully, many of them feel there's too much formalism in the halakhic system and not enough internal meeting, too much obedience, and not enough room for the individual religious soul or for religious spontaneity. More and more sincere young people express these concerns. And many of them are deeply affected by their inability to live a conventional halachic life. And he goes on here, give many examples. If you're following the latest news, there's a classic issue that has come up, Shivinikiyim in Nida. If you study the laws of Nida, you know that Shivinikiyim is for a Zava Gdola, and Benot Yisrael Chachmirol Al Atzmam Afilu Rawa Tipat Dam Kachadal, they declare themselves Nidat, and only after their Mapsik Batara, they first count Shivinikiyim. I don't want to go into detail, I don't want to confuse you. If you don't know the laws, it doesn't matter. You can understand me on a superficial basis. But big outcry today. Let's follow different opinions. Let's abolish the Shivinikiyim. In Makor Rishon, there was a lot published on this. And there are many, many other examples. And he develops the point of view, freedom of choice. Why can't we go back to the Gemara? Why can't we allow people to pick what they want to do? Now let me tell you something. If someone comes to me with this very question, and believe me, I've been hit with it over the decades, there is one basic concept that has to be said. And somehow in the great modern world, we're all afraid to say it. Halacha commands obedience. Naseh v'nishma means we surrender to the divine will. And there's plenty of choice in Judaism. The very fact that you go to Yeshiva University and not to Lakewood. The very fact that you go to Merkaz Harav and not to Panovich. The very fact that you do Hesder at Keren B'Yavne and you don't go to Chevron. It's a tremendous choice. Some of you are Belzer Chassidim. Some of you are Gerach Chassidim. Some of you are Lubavitcher Chassidim. There's unbelievable choice in Judaism. Some of you are followers of Rav Hirsch, Rav Soloveitchik, the Sri Deyesh. Others are followers of Rav Baran, of Rav Meisha, of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It's tremendous choice. But that choice does not extend to basic halacha. If we're going to start playing games with halacha, look how the conservative movement wound up. Just think. It's very hard for you to understand that when I was growing up, the conservative movement claimed it was a halachic institution. And they had people there, Professor Finkelstein, the chancellor, Professor Lieberman, professor of Talmud. These Jews, totally observant. I believe Professor Heschel was totally observant. You go on and on. There are others totally observant. And if they were mocked to something, they try to do it within a halachic context. But once you open up the concept like the conservative movement did, which is exactly The concept that Lopez Cardoza is proposing here, do you remember I taught you this years ago? That when we ask for psak, we get one answer. When they turn to the Rabbinic Assembly, to the Committee on Jewish Law, any opinion that has three rabbis of the committee supporting it becomes an official opinion. So on one issue, you can have four or five different opinions. You take Yom Tov Sheni, one opinion, abolish it, check it. We have a calendar today. One opinion, if you have Yom Tov Sheni minyan, don't abolish it. Another opinion, try to encourage Yom Tov Sheni minyan. Take Stam Yainim, what you probably call Yayin Nesach, but it's a misnomer. Stam Yainim, one opinion, no problem drinking any wine in the world today because wine is not used, the wine that they sell is not used in idol worship. Another opinion, you can drink any wine you want, but when you make Kiddush or Havdalah, use kosher wine. Another opinion, only kosher wine because it's to create a barrier between Jew and Gentile. We shouldn't intermarry. But you see what I'm saying, Moshe? If you wind up, you do what you want. You wind up with conservative Judaism. And ultimately, we know what came out of that. Following Professor Lieberman's death, the movement swung drastically to the left, to the point that today they interviewed a student a few years ago when they came out with the dogma that they're accepting homosexuals. So they asked this student, but it's a pasuk in the Torah. New York Times quoted this. And the student said, since when are we concerned with what the Torah says? We have to be concerned with life today. And we today understand homosexuals have no choice, it's not an illness, it's not an abomination. Not only chuck the Talmud, chuck the Torah Shebichtav. And this is Lopez Cardoza. It's unbelievable. Goes in, why not let people write their own prayers? This is an old canard that's generally thrown at rabbis. So I'll tell you what I've done. I say, you know, before I answer that question, I'd like everyone in the class take out 20 minutes now, compose a prayer on any topic you want. At the end of 20 minutes, you call in, take a few of them, you read what they wrote, and then you read Tehillim. Tell me, gentlemen, what do we have here? Narishkeit. Tehillim? Unbelievable. I'm not opposed to your own prayer, but only after you daven as every Jew has davened. You feel the urge, you feel the need, you want to be a poet, you want to be a Shlomo LeKalbach? Beautiful. But remember, before Shlomo took the guitar, he davened. He davened like his fathers davened, like his grandfathers davened, like we have davened from time immemorial. And you have to be very strong with this, because there's a fault line here. The fault line is that no kid growing up in the Western world understands that word, surrender. Doesn't understand it. Today's kids don't surrender. I always give the example, when I was growing up, there was a tremendous TV show that made TV by a Meshumad, by a Jew who became a Catholic, Milton Berle. Do you ever hear the name? Milton Berle, he was the Texical Hour, he was funny. So could you imagine that one, I think it was on Wednesday night, if I'm not mistaken, that one Wednesday night on his time slot on the little black and white TV, there was a Yankee game. And you couldn't watch both. It's not like today, you can watch one, record the other. You have split screen televisions. You couldn't watch both. You subscribe on a computer, I think it's $100 a year, you can get any game that was ever videoed. It's mind-boggling. There once was the head of the man who ran this building, Nebuchadnezzar. He was pushed away. He was a great man, Howard Weissman. Howard was a baseball bug. So whenever I came into his office, he'd show me what he's watching, some terrific game of a few years ago. I told him, Howard, if I had a subscription like you have, all my learning and all my writing would come to an end. I said, Baruch Hashem, the greatness of the Yankee website is very good. You go, you look, they show you a few plays, you get it out of your system, and you go back to learning Torah and writing Torah. But you understand, you never had to make a choice. The minute you had to choose between Milton Berle and the New York Yankees, you knew what the word compromise meant. It was built into the system. Did you ever think you'd have to share a bedroom, a bed? It doesn't exist today. You grow up differently. I'm not Baruch Hashem. But the fault line is we never learned how to compromise. And we never learned how to surrender. We never learned how to do, we can't do everything we want. At times we have to do something to help someone else. And I see in my own life with the people I know, I see some people are the greatest people. They go out of your way to help you. And other people are so self-centered, they don't budge out of their mold. To be a Ben Torah, you have to know how to surrender, how to compromise. You have to know how to survive temptation. You have to know to use the Kabbalistic word that the Rav taught me. Knew which word am I coming to? Tzimtzum. How to withdraw. And you have to tell a young man, and you have to tell a young girl, you don't have to be ashamed. That halach is not for you to play with. It's not putty clay. It's not a tinker toy. It's not a computer game. This is Divan Hashem Zu Halacha. And Chas V'Chalila, we should take the halacha and leave it to free choice. Fine, when you're living the machloket, asay l'charav. But once there's a Hiskim Aleim Kol Yisrael, there is Hidgapshut, crystallization. We now have to surrender to the yoke of Torah. And I'll tell you a good vart from the Rav. It appears in Ish Halacha. The Rav, a beautiful, simple vart. Whenever Chazal speak about Yirat Shemayim, they say, O Malchut Shemayim. Oh, what does the word mean? Oh, a yoke. The Rav said it's enough to say Kabbalat Malchut Shemayim. Why oh? Because at times it feels like a yoke. At times it's difficult. At times you don't understand it. All your friends are running around Shabbos. You have a day off. They're doing this, they're doing that. And you have to go to shul and you can't do malacha. You're traveling. A guy can eat anything, anywhere, anytime. A Jew, kashrut, such an important factor. A guy can run around with 101 different women. A Jew, limited. Our whole sexual moray. And you have to understand that at times it is difficult. At times it is a yoke. At times it is surrender. The whole concept of Israel. You see people living very happily on the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, Teaneck. Don't bother us about Israel. Don't bother us about Aliyah. Well, to quote Rav Kefet, he's a wise guy. He can get up in front of 1,000 people in America and say to them, oh, you have a wonderful Torah, but you're missing one pasha. Lech lecha me'atzecha mi'moladotcha mi'beit avicha. One pasha. It's a yoke. And you have to teach that. And there's plenty of self-expression. And there's plenty of choice. But in the halachic system, there has to be surrender. And he goes on and on. I mean, I can't believe his words. Over the last 500 years, famous rabbinic leaders have called to limit the overwhelming authority of Rabbi Yosef Karo Shulchan Aruch and Maimonides Mishne Torah. Listen to this. They felt that these works do not reflect authentic Judaism and halachic tradition. The reason is obvious. Both these great codes of Jewish law are very un-Jewish in spirit. They present halakha in ways which oppose the heart and soul of the Talmud, and therefore of Judaism itself. They deprive Judaism of its multifaceted halakhic tradition and its inherent music. It is not the works themselves which are the problem, but the ideology which they represent, the ethos of codifying and finalizing Jewish law. This is exactly the opposite of the Rambam. Exactly. Hold on. Do you understand what I just read? Right? That codifying, the Gemara has so many different opinions. But what he's not stating here is that with all the different opinions, doesn't the Gemara always try to reach a maskana? Isn't teiku a last resort? Don't we try to reach a conclusion? Don't you have at the end of the sugya halacha ba halacha ba halacha? I just in chulin, three opinions, paskin like them, against all the other trends. And it's obvious. You can't go on having 100 different people, 100 different nations. And here he attacks the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. We are plagued by over-codification and dogmatization. Wow. We are plagued. I'll go a step further. I want to show you more on this. But this is Bayit Vegan versus Bayit Vegan. If Lopaz Kadosa is right, then write Yeshiva University off the map. Because I'm among the more liberal of the Rosh Yeshiva, I would say. I'm a little bit broader. Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. How can you talk like this? Yes, Mendy.
Historically, he's sort of tapping into like the early, wasn't there an early Ashkenazi opposition to the
Rav? Well, of course we'll get there. I told you I'm going to discuss this in great more detail from a halachic perspective, but today I'm dealing with it from a hashkafic philosophic perspective.
That's where he's coming.
He's quoting, he's playing a game, but he's not telling you why were they opposed to the Ramah, because they didn't agree with this psakim. But it's not that they were opposed to the idea of codification.
Besides,
there's a trace of it in the, there's a famous Mashar, and we'll get to it. But you take the Sefer Levushim. He was opposed because he did his own codification. And thank God, if from Mordechai Yaffe, by the way, I taught many of his descendants in Michalam. Whenever you meet a Yaffe, the chances are they're a direct descendant of the Baal Levushim. But we're very lucky that he was opposed to the Shulchan Aruch. You know why? Mixed seating at the weddings. You follow? You may know what I'm saying. Shulchan Aruch said, you know, it's separate seating, and you can't say Shasimcha B'mono, where it's mixed. And the Lavush comes along and says, nowadays we are used to intermingling with women. You can absolutely say Shasimcha B'mono. So, I mean, our whole battle over how to relate to women and Hadaret Nashim and all that's going on in the Israeli scene, you go back to the Ramah, you go back to the Lavush, and you're in heavyweight a boxing ring, okay? But this is just amazing, okay? Okay. Then he quotes, discussing his view, he tries to develop the idea that halakha is an unfinished symphony, the quest for God must remain open-ended, and he quotes the Yam Shel Shlomo, his introduction to Baba Kama. I'm going to come to it in a minute. It's a very famous introduction. He quotes from the Michtav Me'Eliyahu with Rav Dessler's explanation of the Machloket, the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Labriyot, and you see that you have a right to not ignore minority opinions, and that there's always been Machloket, and it's always left for you to choose. Gentlemen, let me take these two great rabbinic sources that he quotes. One a early Achron, and one almost a contemporary Achron. Yam Shel Shlomo. The Mashal one of the greatest of the Polish achronim. And he wrote, you know, the famous Perush, Amshel Shlomo, the Mashal and the Gemara. And his Hakdama to Baba Kama. And what is he saying here? What is he dealing with here? And it's axiomatic. This is so basic to understanding teaching of Torah, understanding Talmidim. He speaks about Matan Torah. And he makes the point that everyone, all the Jews were there, but each one envisions it, experiences it in accordance with his own, he uses a Kabbalistic word, sinorat, I would use, in accordance with his own physical, mental, psychological makeup. And this is absolutely true. This is why we have machloket. This is why you can have even an agata. This is why personalities are so different. This is the way God made the world. But this has nothing to do with halacha crystallizing. Halacha crystallizing is a function of human dignity, of the human shtans, of the human story. Otherwise we become 10, 12, 100, 1,000 different people. And you all know that even sitting in a classroom, and I've seen this so many times, but I don't have to go any further than what I've said about the Rav, and I said it in the documentary that I brought into the world on my Rebbe. And I've said this many times, and I wrote this in the new edition of the Encyclopedia Judaica. You'll see this as well. And you know what's amazing about the Rav? That you take my era. You look at the picture in my office that I've published, that picture in the Rav. I think maybe I published it in Washington. I'm not certain, but it certainly is in the Rav. It's a very famous picture. There's my class sitting with the Rav. I can identify many of those different individuals. I don't think two individuals came out of it seeing the Rav in the same light. Give you names that you know. Aaron Rakefet, you know. Rav Heschel Schachter, you know. Rav Yosef Blau, Jerry Blau, you've heard the name. Mashkiach, you know. Rabbi Steve Riskin, Shlomo Riskin. Rabbi Saul Berman, no, founder of Eda, partner with Rabbi Weiss, Chovevei Torah, Rabbinic Fellowship. These are all my classmates. I can give you many more names. At all the names I mentioned, these were all top students outside of myself. I exclude myself out of humility. That's not nice, I should. I once had a student, the Kollel, who found someone who I write about in my book, and he tells my student, who is his son-in-law's brother, he says, I don't want to repeat it word by word, but the gist of it was, what your Rebbe's writing about me, really he should have written about himself. So all right, these were all top students. Did any two of these guys think alike? Do we think alike? Do we describe the Rav the same way? And we were all in the same class. We were all with the Rav for many years. And we all thought and felt we knew the Rav intimately. And I don't believe Rav Heschel Schachter is a liar. I don't believe Rabbi Saul Berman is a liar. And I don't believe Aaron Rakefet is a liar. And I don't believe Rabbi Blau is faking it. You follow me? But these are human beings. This is the mashal. It's beautiful. We each have our own sinorat. It's actually not in Gemara at the end of brachot. When you see a myriad of Jews, you have to make a special bracha because they are tamen and shumat. We don't look alike. We don't think alike. And that's a compliment to us. That's what the Rav always used to yell at us Don't imitate me because you want to imitate me. Only do what I do if you think I'm right. And that's why the Rebbe could give a whole shiur, the famous example of sitting for Abdullah, and then a kid said, Rebbe, should I sit for Abdullah? So the Rebbe says, what did your father do? Father stands, you stand. It's unbelievable. And this is so basic, and this is not Hasidic. If you have a Hasidic soul, then it's true. They want to look alike, they want to be part of the crowd. There's an expression in Chabad, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. It's a beautiful expression. You have to appreciate Chabad to understand what that expression means. I know what it means. I've seen it in action. But we're not Chabadnikim. Patsifayim and Andamat, Deotayim and Andamat. I never saw the Rav wear a black hat. Never. He wore brown. He loved brown. Brown was his color. That's why my two books on the Rav are in different shades of brown. I designed the covers. And yes, Tova said to me, you're right. Absolutely right. The Rav loved brown. That was his color. But even with colors. Why the Torah world chose black, I don't know. To me, black, I have told you more than once, there's sources in Sefer Smachot and elsewhere, it's a sign of mourning. Avelut. Believe me, I'm in mourning now. It's not a happy feeling to be an avelut. Take my word for it. Halavai, we shouldn't have to wear black. And he goes on here that this is why we have machloket. This is why we have different opinions. And then he says, Al kein masach haTorah lechachamim hashtulim b'chol dor kol echad v'echad lefi chotzeiv makosich lo lechalek le'iluy lehosif kefi mashiyero min hashamayim v'im bo letaher yisayeh lo baruch rachmona v'yahav chachmata lechachamim. And he says so beautifully, this is why we need rabbis. This is why we need a psak, because each one sees it differently. And ultimately, it's the Rabbanim, in their great wisdom, that would ultimately bring about a hitkapshut, a crystallization, a psak that's clear and loud. But this mashal, what does it have to do with throwing out the Shulchan Aruch? What does it have to do with throwing out the Mishnah Berurah? Zelochud v'zelochud. That we're all different, that we all think differently, that we all have a psychological framework that is different, that we all have our entire being, our entire gestalt is different. This is the greatness of the human being. He's made B'Tselem U'Dmut Elokim, that every human being is unique. But halacha ultimately has to be basically one. So we remain one people. And I absolutely disagree that the mashal is a support for what our friend in Bayit Vagan happens to have said. I want to tell you, I know him quite well, very fine individual, but it's just amazing how people mature in life and then they go off on a side path, and it's just frightening to put this into print. I don't know. I have to pause. It reminds me of David Hartman. When David Hartman came in Aliyah, Talmud of the Rav, a PhD, and a successful rabbi, and I remember he appeared on TV, and I couldn't believe my ears. It was exactly this type of thinking. And we see where David Hartman ultimately became, and what developed, and what the offshoots are, and Shira Chadasha, and all these type of minyanim with women and men, literally conservative Judaism. It hurts capable people, but there has to be a concept of surrender. A human being is only a human. The Torah is divine. It has a divine system. And Berich Rachmana, like the Mashal says, thank God we have Rabbanim who devote their lives to study, to Chiddush, to understanding, to Psak. Now, the Michtav Me'Eliyahu that he quotes is even more fascinating. And this is something that you'll be able to use when you speak to students, speak to Balabatim. First of all, a few words about Rav Eliyahu Eliezer Deschler. the Mikhtav Me'Eliyahu. I want to introduce you to a few volumes that were put out in Cleveland by the Hebrew Academy. And these volumes were put out already about 15 years ago. They are absolutely excellent. What the Hebrew Academy attempted to do was to collect living testimony from people who yet saw Europe before the destruction. And I don't know how many volumes came out. I own three. What I'm holding in front of me, Xeroxed from Unit 1, the world that was Lithuania. And they interviewed the Menachel of the Hebrew Academy of Cleveland. He just died this year, Rabbi Nachum Zev Dessler. He was the son of the Mikhtav Me'Eliyahu. And he was dean of the Hebrew Academy, and it's a beautiful article about his father. Now, they go back to Kelm. What was famous about Kelm? Kelm was one of the key stops in the history of the Musa movement. A little shtetl in Lithuania, and in that shtetl was a Talmud Torah. It was called the Kelman Talmud Torah, had the greatest rebbeim. The best story is about Kelm, that they tell a story, someone left an umbrella there. Stopped raining, he left it, he came back 3 years later, 4 years later, he found the umbrella exactly where he left it. This was Kelm, it was Musa, yeah, an organized life. You didn't take what wasn't yours. Everything was neat. You were taught to come to davening on time. Baruchu was Baruchu, no one was late. Kelm was Kelm, and that's where Rav Dessler grew up. Later, his life is saved. He comes to England, he comes to Gateshead. Finally, he comes to Eretz Yisrael. And his Talmidim here in Eretz Yisrael put together what survived of his Shayurim. And that's what we call Mikhtav Me'Eliyahu. It's written notes that survived the Holocaust, that survived the English period, and that's what gives us Mikhtav Me'Eliyahu, that's such a popular sefer today. So, what he's discussing here, I'll give you the source in a minute, but let me explain it, and this is absolutely true. When you're impressed by something external, it's very different than being impressed by something internal. Now, what do I mean? Imagine I would come to class one day with my old rabbinic clothes from Maplewood, South Orange, come in a beautiful, dignified black suit with a tie and a rabbinic hat. Wow. You would be impressed, right or wrong. Rebbe, you look so different today. What's happening? Well, I decided to dress like a Rav used to dress when I went into the rabbinate in Maplewood, South Orange, 50, 60 years ago. Fine. You're impressed. That Sunday, coming Monday, the same dress. A little less impressed. Tuesday, you see me running around Xeroxing, preparing lectures. Wow, the Rebbe's still dressed, but that's it. By Wednesday, you don't even bat an eyelash. That's all right, you get used to it. You get used to it. It's like seeing you're going out with a girl and she wears this beautiful dress. Wow, you're impressed. See a week later, it's the same dress. You're less impressed. The third week, you take it for granted. Okay. Let me not say dress, because the girls you go out with have more than one dress, but jewelry. Let's say she has a beautiful pin. All right? Pin. Washington to Washington. You're impressed. Second week, all right, nice. But third week, take it for granted. Spiritually, when something impresses you, it's just the opposite. The more you're exposed, the more you're impressed. You go into Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik's class, you're blown away. But you know what's amazing? The more you hear his shayurim, the more you hear his hashkafa, the more you hear his drashot, the more you're impressed. You're blown away by his greatness. Rav Moshe Feinstein. You meet Rav Moshe the first time, little man, stop talking and learning. Meeting a second time, a third time, you're overwhelmed. How much he knows. It blows you away. I'll never forget when Aaron Lichtenstein took his students to visit Professor Lieberman in the mid-60s, it had to be. So he told his students, you can ask Professor Lieberman any question you want. He knows kol ha-Torah kula as if it's right in front of him. And the students started, they were blown away. The man's knowledge. That's something on the inside, not external, internal. So, the Michtav Me'Eliyahu develops the idea that that's the machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. How do you view the miracle of Hanukkah? Do you view it? You see a miracle, the oil should have burned out, it survived. You're impressed, but you're only viewing it externally. So that each day, your impression cools off. Or no, do you view it internally, that the Jew has the power to go further, to build, to light, to emblazon, to inspire? The miracle only gets stronger and stronger. We've survived the Hellenizers. We've had a tremendous miracle. Mosifin Bekodesh, the Lomorit. And then he had beautiful thought. Beautiful thought. And he says, that's the Machlaikas. So, Lopez Cardoza jumps on the bandwagon. Look, he views Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel. Both legitimate. Both represent different points of view. Both represent different reactions. Why can't we halachically have choice? And he doesn't realize, fine, with all the drashot you can say, but nowadays every Jew lights. Mosifin Bekodesh, the Lomoritin, right or wrong? Every Jew lights that way. Now, you'll find it. Michtav Me'Eliyahu, the second volume, Kerach Sheni, beginning on page 121. And he describes his Rebbeim, the Gedolei Yisrael, how when they lit candles, you could feel the Kedusha intensifying every day. But the majority of people, the Hamon Ha'am, you know, they light candles. The first night is like the eighth night, the seventh night like the second night. We don't feel that same inspiration. And by the way, the Michtav Me'Eliyahu explains a different problem for me. I once had a very wonderful student in the Kollel, must be 15 years ago already, very sincere, Baal Tshuva. And in Israel, it's a very big thing by the Chassidic Rebbeim to go watch the Rebbe's light the candles during Hanukkah. So he once asked me, Rebbe, why do they go, what do you see? I said, you're asking me? I'm a Litvak. I don't go running to Rebbeim, you have to ask them. But you see, with the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, you can understand when a Rebbe lights candles, he sees a lot deeper than the Hamon Ha'am. He sees Kedusha. He sees intensifying the message. And the chassid wants to be inspired, he watches the Rebbe. And you could fit the Michtav Eliyahu very nicely into that concept. All right, let me make one more point today. Okay. You know what's amazing? Everything you said is correct. The Rambam doesn't give reasons. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't give reasons, in the Shulchan Aruch at least. But so many Perushim were written on the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that you find literally hundreds and hundreds of commentaries giving reasons why we paskin what we paskin, why they paskin the way they did. Look into the Kesef Mishnah. Look into the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avraham. Look into the Mishnah Lemelech. Look into the Haggad Maimonides. There are no end to what you have in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. And reasons on top of reasons on top of reasons have been given to every syllable that they write in their original text. Any Sefer Psak that came out afterwards goes back to their format, to their organization. Some of the Svarim achieved acclaim, but all that acclaim and all that recognition is still a mirror image of the original Shulchan Aruch. And I'll give you an example. Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Anyone with Chassidic inclinations knows that the Baal Tanya wrote a new Shulchan Aruch based upon the Shulchan Aruch, and the Baal Tanya Shulchan Aruch conquered the world. It's not just Chabad Chassidim who have to deal with his Psakim. Every Posek, the Rav had tremendous Derech Eretz for the Rav Shulchan Aruch. Why? Yes, it followed the Shulchan Aruch. But there was something very, very special about the Baal Tanya Shulchan Aruch. Have you ever studied it? Ah, something very special. Within the world of the Shulchan Aruch, he brings in Chassidus, Kabbalah, philosophy. You feel a merging of worlds, the cold Gritmak and the warm Chassid. And this is what many Jews wanted. They loved the Rav Shulchan. can't escape a cold. They loved the Rav Shulchan Aruch. And let me give you, time allowing, two beautiful examples. Look into Hilchot, Hashkamat HaBoker, Siman Aleph, Subdivision Chet. And he goes into basically explaining to us that each locality has its own zman. You have to go with where you live. And this is why it's night here, it's day there. Here it's Shabbat, there it's not. Simple halacha. Very important halacha. Shailas come up all the time. You're flying on Tisha B'Av. America to Israel. You land in Israel, your fast is cut by 7 hours. You're flying to America, your fast is elongated by 7 hours. But nowhere does it come up more. Yantiv Sheni Shel Galyat. So fine. He adds a concept here that reverberates in any discussion of Yantiv Sheni until this very moment. And he says, and I'm quoting, and I don't understand it, it's Kabbalah, but I can paraphrase it, I can verbalize it, that the rays of God change in his relating to the earth, whether it's Chol or Kodesh. And that's why when it's Shabbat, that area has rays of Kedusha, and other areas where it's not yet Shabbat, it's still emanations of Chol. And he says the same thing with Yontif Sheni. In Golus, God relates to the world with rays of Kedusha, Yontif Sheni. In Eretz Yisrael, Yontif Sheni, rays of Chol, profane, weekday. Got it? Do you understand the implications? According to the Alter Rebbe, according to this Sif in his Shulchan Aruch, it means when you're in America, when you're in Canada, when you're in Brazil, when you're in France, when you're in South Africa, no matter where you are, on Yontif Sheni, it's 2 days of Yontif. Why? The emanations from God are sacred. Labriot. When you're in Israel, no matter where you're from, China, the moon, South Africa, America, 1 day, the second day is Chol. Tefillin, Malacha, you can't interfere with the emanations from God. You see, this is a classic example from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, where he adds dimensions that you don't find in the normative Shulchan Aruch. And it not only caught on with Chabadnikim, but even the greatest Litvakim, when they deal with Psak Halacha, you have to quote the Alter Rebbe. He was a Gon Adir. Give you one more example that you love, that applies to us. Let me get it. One more example. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim melech olam she'kol yom dvaro. The regular Shulchan Aruch, Yerodeya, Hilchot Talmud Torah, Resh Mem Vav, Halacha Zayin, Ein melamdim Torah le'talmud she'inu hagun. Not allowed to teach Torah to a Talmud who's a wise aleck, a rusher, a maneuver, a pushtak, call him whatever name you want, a poyer. I can curse out a Talmud in many different languages. Ela machzirin oto lemutav, umanhigin oto bederek yishara, v'yachakach machnisin oto lebeit hamedesh, umalamdim oto. Oh, that's the psak. If we would follow this psak, half of Torah Tshraga wouldn't be allowed in. With all due respect, let me not talk about it. Half of BMT, the kids I taught, 3/4 wouldn't be allowed in. Wise Alex. Wise guys. Thrill seekers. Straighten them out. If you're going to wait till they straighten out, you're going to wait 49 years to Yevil. Now, look at the same psak in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Hilchot Talmud Torah, Perek Daled, Halacha Yud Zayin. Ein melamdin Torah le'talmud she'inu hagun ein machnis oto le'mutav, techila, v'achakach machnisin oto le'beit hamed she'melamdim oto. So far, exactly like the Shulchan Aruch. Beat the hell out of him, straighten him out, turn him into a mensch. Then you let him come into Torah Tshraga. like the Shulchan Aruch, right? Not now. V'yim I yapshar l'achzir l'motav t'chila, v'hu docheik l'ikanes l'ilmod, t'hei smol docha v'yamin mekarevet, ולא כי ישוע בן פרחי שדחל לפלוני בשתי ידיים. וואו. What a difference. Do you understand what I just read? That what about the guy who's wild and he's only interested in baseball and he has a girlfriend who's going to chveis to mechwala and he's calling her every day. Well, said, no. Take him in. Inspire him. Don't push him away. Oh, you got to tell him, shape up a little. Raise yourself a little. But with the other hand, you got to pull him close and eat him up with love and affection and understanding and inspiration and Torah and spirituality. And not like Yeshua ben Prakhor, what he's referring to as a Gemara you can't even find today. Why? The church censored it out. That Yeshua ben Prakhor threw Jesus away, chased him out of the base medrash. Look what came out of it. Now do you start to understand why everyone loved the Shulchan Aruch Harav? This was very different. And you can find many examples. I don't believe a doctorate has been done, but I would throw out an idea for some enterprising person who's both a Lubavitcher and has scholarly ambitions, and maybe it's been done. I stand, if anyone can correct me or inform me, I'll be very happy to do an entire doctorate on the addendums, philosophical, Hasidish, Kabbalistic, Hashkafic, of the Alter Rebbe on the Shulchan Aruch, how it reflects in his entire work. Shulchan Aruch Harav. Wow. So allow me to repeat. What have we done today? We developed the whole concept of why the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are so basic. Hiskim Aleihem Kol Yisrael. We developed a total understanding of why there has to be a process like this. Why we can't leave it Ish HaYashav Beinav Ya'aseh. My example of composing your own prayer is a perfect example. And by the way, he writes about it. Why can't we make up our own prayers? Why can't we compose our own prayers? Why are we limited to the formalities? You know, the kids are all asking this. But they have to be taught. Do you want to be a good Jew? There's a concept of surrender. You can't do whatever you want, how you want, when you want. There's a halachic system. But within that halachic system, there is so much choice. And I showed you the Mashal and the Mikhtab Me'eliyahu are beautiful. What does that have to do with the ability to chuck halacha in accordance with your own tenacity and your own understanding? It's a big machloket. And, it's Bayit Vagan versus Bayit Vagan. And there's no question that this is on the table today. You see it right down the line. I gave you an example with the Shivanakim as a classic example, because when it comes to sex, people can turn over the whole Shulchan Aruch, Kol HaTorah Kula. God have mercy, how our sexual mores are influenced by what's happening around us. I don't have to elaborate, I don't have to give examples. It's in the news every day. So we have to be able to understand, yes, there are differences, but halacha, hitgapshut, crystallization, an ongoing process. Now, I spoke about this just on a hashkafic, philosophic level today. I'll come to it in much more detail when we have to deal with it halachically, but that's further on down the line. All I want you to understand that our great source for halacha beyond Shas and Mefarshim is, of course, the codes that we have with all the differences between them, and the uniqueness of the Rambam, and of course the Shulchan Aruch. The example of the Rav Shulchan Aruch is classic, showing you, yes, there are new Shulchan Aruchs, but even they center around the original Shulchan Aruch. And I gave you a little bit of understanding of what the Rav Shulchan Aruch is all about. I will pick up next week, Be'ezrat HaNatan Yov Kolach, exactly where I left off. I want to discuss the Aruch HaShulchan, I want to discuss the Mishnah Berurah for a moment, and then I want to come into responsa literature. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat HaShem, the class is devoted to religious Zionism and Aliyah, the contemporary Israeli scene, and how to deal with it. Now, I have some freebies. This is Hamayan, if anyone's interested, the latest issue from, it's a very fabulous publication, Nishma Divrei Torah and Parshat of the Week, very insightful, why you graduate in Toronto, Rabbi Benjamin Hecht. If anyone's interested, I have Xerox copies of the History of Teachers Institute and of Dr. Belkin's life. If anyone is interested, it's from the Sefer HaZikaron to Dr. Belkin. If anyone's going into teaching here, or living here, or has children here, this is Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho with puzzles and games for children to do. It's for you, it's for you. Anyone here who has a Hasidic soul and wants to see a miracle, this is about the Satmar Rebbe, Rebbe, who has my name, who is visiting Palm Springs, and how he interacts with the Chabadnikim in Palm Springs. It's beautiful colored pictures. Ashrei Ayin Ra'atazot. But you have to have a Hasidic soul to understand. Finally, I want to apologize that scandal with Ola and Cars for Kids. According to what I told here, it's not Chabad. In other words, I was told it's too Chabadikim. It was modeled after what a Russian Chabad did a few years ago. So in other words, that this Dresden scandal is not Chabad. It's beyond Chabad. The proof is they're sending the kids to RJJ, not to a Chabad school. And it's a terrible scandal, and it's in the news. But Kachazeh, we're not in the news because we're not involved in scandals, but we're only trying to teach Torah Hashem Tamima. We pick up again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Thank you very, very much.